Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 925. This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by The Magicians on Sci-Fi. Now, Lydia and I love this show. We've become friends with as many people who work on the show as possible. We're trying to figure out how to recreate some of the items in the show as furniture in our house. And we are very excited that it is coming back. The new season is January 10th, 9, 8 Central on Sci-Fi. Last season ended. It was pretty dark. There was magic was in trouble. See, I'm afraid to give away too much because if you haven't watched the just start watching it and then get back to me. But this show is so much fucking fun and we adore it and everyone on it is a blast. And so please start watching it if you haven't. And if you're already into The Magicians, the new season returns January 10th, 9, 8 Central on Sci-Fi. And, tweet at us occasionally. Because we're watching along with you and you can let us know, we'll tweet at each other during the show. Liz tweets about it all the time. I love it. She's taken a bunch of magicians themed pictures. You know, when we like stuff, sometimes we get a little obsessed. That's what we do. That's how we live. Let's go to the Nerdist community corkboard. There's some exciting things from you in the Nerdist community. For instance, Hamid writes, "Howdy, been listening to the Nerdist for several years now," and he says, "I have an event coming up Friday, January 19th, a concert and fundraiser for Sunrise Daisy Retreat, devoted to the emotional, physical, and mental well-being of cancer survivors. He himself was diagnosed with a freakishly rare lymphoma in 1991. There were 9 documented cases before, 9, and he was the first to live beyond 72 months. So first of all, congratulations, Hamid. That is amazing. That is, 27 years now. And he wants to do something to sort of spread the awareness and sort of spread mental well-being. So the concert's going to be at the Chapel Theater in Milwaukee, Oregon, from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. Friday, January 19th. And so please go. Please support this. It's a phenomenal cause. And Hamid, I hope you're it seems like you're doing great. I hope you're doing great. We send you hugs here from Nerdist. R.N. Floyd on Reddit writes, "After writing for years, I found the courage to pursue my dream to finish and publish my dark fantasy novel called The Book of Low by R.N. Floyd. Fantasy world where status and worth are achieved through powers and magical abilities of each species. Since humans have no magic or extraordinary powers, they are considered little more than livestock to be enslaved. The Book of Lo follows the enslaved human girl Lo as she navigates through such a world and tries to survive as she is caught up in the schemes and covers up of the Fae royalty." I'm chuckling because the idea of humans being livestock to serve magical animals is delightful to me. If you guys might be interested, it's most easily available on Amazon in both print and ebook, as well as free to read on Kindle Select. That again is The Book of Lo by R.N. Floyd. You can send any event of your choosing to events@nerdist.com. And then we scour through and pull stuff out and do the best we can to get these up so you guys are aware of what you're doing in the community. I also have some stand-up shows coming up in February 8 through 10. I'll be at Stand Up Live in Phoenix, Arizona. And then 16th and 17th of February at the Brea Improv, and the 23rd and 24th of February at the Oxnard Levity Live. And tickets are available at all of those establishments' web portals. And I'm going to bring Mike Furman with me, too. You know what? I should see if April Richardson wants to come along, too. We'll just make it a fun comedy dork trio and hope to see you there. This episode is my friend Michael Rosenbaum, who I've known for a very long time. And Michael, by the way, I did his podcast recently. It's relatively new, but it's great. It's called Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. And you probably know Michael from, of course, he played Lex Luthor in Smallville, and he's been in a million things, and he's super funny. And I just have to publicly thank him, because he gave me one of the greatest Christmas presents I've ever received, and I posted it on Instagram. There is a Golden Girls Clue board game. It is Clue, but it is wrapped in the Golden Girls, and I just need to publicly thank Michael Rosenbaum for allowing me to realize this dream that started so many decades ago when the Golden Girls first started, and I never could dream that these two things would come together into one magical entity. So Michael Rosenbaum, thank you for being a friend. This episode is also brought to you by HelloFresh. All the ingredients delivered right to your door in recyclable insulated packaging, comes pre-measured and handy labeled meal kits. You're going to know exactly which ingredients go for which recipe. And HelloFresh offers a wide variety of chef curated recipes that change weekly, including there's a classic plan, which comes with a wide variety of meat, fish, seasonal produce, a veggie plan for vegetarian recipes with plant-based proteins, and a family plan, which is quick and easy meals for the whole family. And you can choose a delivery day that works best for your schedule, and you can even pause your account for weeks at a time if you need to. But it's just a fantastic meal delivery service that shops plans, delivers all of your favorite step-by-step recipes, pre-measured ingredients. You can just cook, eat, enjoy. You can make it easy to cook delicious balanced dinners for less than $10 a meal. So it's no more time-consuming meal planning or grocery shopping. Everyone's busy. You know what? I'm telling you, sometimes you might get to the end of the day and you go, why am I so mentally exhausted? Because your brain is just constantly doing curls all day long, having to figure out whatever is going on in your life, get to places, pick a person up, get deadlines. And you don't always have time to figure out what you're going to do for dinner. Sometimes Liddy and I will just stare at a menu to try to figure out, like, what we're both exhausted, what can be easily delivered to our place. And this just would take all of that stress off your plate. For $30 off your first week, visit HelloFresh.com. Enter the promo code Nerdist30. And thanks to them for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast, which is number 925 with Michael Rosenbaum, Katie Levine. Please roll the thing.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Now, see, that just means that you have to get out of the house more.
It's true.
Is that on purpose, sort of?
Well, I feel like I get more work. I do a lot of work here, but it's nice to go somewhere. I mean, it's nice to separate the work-home spaces, because if you don't, then you spend a lot of time just working in bed or, like, not relaxing. You know, like when I'm with Lydia, I'm working instead of, like, hanging out with her. Like, oh, I got to do. But if you,
I think that makes sense. I wonder if I should do that more.
I think it's better to have a place, you know, especially because you train your brain to go, okay, when I go to this place, that is work. And I will focus on the, you know, amount of time that I'm there. I will focus on work, as opposed to what most of us do, which is just this kind of like, well, I'm home. I guess I should be on the computer doing stuff and not really not really being able to fall asleep or relax because your brain is...
I did that because I had an office at Sunset Gower Studios.
Oh, yeah.
And I was there for, like, when I did my movie there, and I was there for a good year and a half, editing and post, and it was great and very productive. And then after the movie, a couple months passed, and I had these two buddies who were like, hey... They, like, wrote Employee of the Month and Sorority Boys and a bunch of movies and stuff. And, like, right along, they're like, hey, we need a place. Can we, like, use yours? So it started out as just, like, you know, 6 months. And they've been there for 2 years.
Oh, my God. So they kind of edged you out.
They cover everything. It's still under my name. But it's, like, anytime I want it back. But I'm like, but maybe I should start venturing out and, like, waking up, going to write for 3 or 4 hours somewhere else. It is hard to do it at home.
It is. Well, especially... You know, if you just, like my friend Jonah just rented a small little office just to have a, because you'll do your most focused work when you know that that's the only purpose for that space.
Right.
You know you will go. Yeah. And
what else are you doing?
Well,
why am I here?
And also it's really challenging when you have artistic creative careers where you don't clock in and out all the time. It's like, you know, when you're on a production, of course, you have a
structure.
Schedule, some structure. But, you know, like, I only work really well when I have deadlines. But if I don't have a deadline, it's really hard to be like, I'm just going to write today.
That's what I'm going through right now. You are my therapist.
Well, that's why if you had a space.
You really are.
Like, if you kind of do the Seinfeld thing of, you know, I'm going to go to this workspace and from, you know, whatever it is, 8 to 5 or whatever the hours are, that's my work time. I'm going to go treat this like a job. Whatever I write there is fine. If it sucks, it doesn't matter.
But you'll get more done, won't you?
You'll get more done because it's focused. And then when you leave, you have this weird peace of mind knowing that
you did something.
You did something, and now it's okay to go home and relax instead of just being at home going, "Fuck, I'm not doing anything."
Did I do
what
enough?
What am I doing?
Yeah, because I'm doing that right now. I'm writing a show, and I have a showrunner and the producer and all these things, and I'm writing it, and we're working on the pitch, and they're like, updates. And I'm like, yeah, mid-January I'll have a thing. So I'm kind of like, okay, and there's holiday parties and there's things, and I'm like traveling and I'm doing all these things. And I'm like, oh, I have a few hours now. And it's hard to get to stuff.
Yeah, you gotta be wary of, you know, if you can do your work in your underwear, you should be wary of that workspace.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you'll play video games and then you'll roll into a little bit of work and then you'll get distracted and then you're like, oh, I'll go into the other room and watch TV or I'll go to the kitchen, you know. But if you just have a focused workspace, you know you'll just squeeze it all out for the day and then you'll feel like you accomplished something. It's very hard to feel like you accomplished anything when you're working out of your home, I think.
Oh, my God. I think after when he was on my podcast, I laughed.
That was really fun.
It was great for me. It was one of the best in terms of like, I just felt like I was getting so much information from you for me.
What made you decide to start doing a podcast?
What made me do it? This one guy, I was doing stand-up comedy, and I was opening for Bobby Lee. And I was just, mm-hmm. This was my third time. Bobby goes, come down to Irvine, open up for me. And I'm like, okay. And I went down, there was this guy taking pictures. I go, hey, I don't know if I'm going to continue this, but I'd love a picture of me doing stand-up. Can you take a picture? He was like, yeah. He's the photographer. And then I gave him my email. And he emailed me and said, hey, I don't know. Have you ever thought of having a podcast? Or no, first he says, do you have a good website? I go, what do you mean? He's like, you need one. You're branding yourself. You need a website for you, for all your stuff, your band, your pocket, whatever. And I go, I don't need that. He goes, sure you do. In today's market, and he was like, but he was one of those guys who didn't push you. You know when you go into a store and the guy leaves you alone so you buy everything?
Sure.
But the guy's like, well, can I help you with this? How about this? You're like, yeah, I'm going to leave.
Yeah.
He was a guy who was just like, I don't know if you... It'd be, you should maybe think about it, but whatever you want to do. So I was compelled. And I said, okay, let's do it. And he made this beautiful website. And I was like, hey, this is great. It's got my podcast dates. You know, it kind of shows fans what I'm doing. And then he goes, you should have a podcast. I go, yeah, I kind of heard that, but everybody's got a podcast. I don't know. I was like, well, what was your own twist? I go, and it ended up just being something fun in my living room that would be just, it becomes therapy for me. And I get to know them. It's sort of like what you do in a way, but it's like, you know.
Everyone's different, though.
Everyone's different.
You're different. You know, like, your podcast is different because you're different. And that's what makes it different. But
right.
It's hard to see that because you think, like, oh, mine, we're going to talk about horseshoes. It's like, no.
Yeah.
You can just be yourself. If you want to talk about horseshoes, you can. But, I mean, like, you being yourself is different.
Yeah. Enough. Well, my friend Dax is now, or you know Dax.
Yeah,
he's doing one now. He's getting started. And my buddy, who's doing mine, actually is helping him with his. And he like called me. He's like, hey, do you care if I use your guy? I'm like, no. And then I call my guy. I'm like, hey, this is going to take your time away from my shit, is it?
You need to tank his.
Yeah, tank his. I want it to be. But it's specific. It's certain things that people talk about. Mine's sort of, hey, I want to get to know who you are.
Dax doesn't need a podcast. He's got those washer-dryer commercials. He doesn't need to do a podcast.
I mean, how much is he making off those? Probably a lot. Are we already rolling?
Yeah.
I like that.
His wife is the Let It Go girl.
I think I better let it go.
Isn't it? Isn't Doesn't Kristen sing Let It Go?
No, the other one.
The other one?
The other actress. I've heard her name.
The other one. Who's the other one that sings that?
Well, the other character. She sings it.
Yeah.
Some guy was... some guy is suing Disney over that song. And I listened to the song, and it's a Spanish... He's a Latino artist, and...
And I listened to a song. And I was like, I kind of hear it, but I think there's only so many notes, you know? Like, if you go back in the history of music, like, there's going to be some repetitive themes musically. I don't know, but it's interesting. I can't write, Katie, if you could pull it up, the guy who's like, I'd be interested to have people listen, who are listening to the podcast, listen to the two side by side and go, yeah, no, that sounds like a, you know, but he's named all the people from Frozen.
Right,
in
right.
suits as part of the thing. What did Dax's podcast launch yet?
No. In fact, I don't even know if I'm supposed to say anything about it, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
He's doing a podcast. He's getting it going. And he asked if he could use my guy, and that's all.
And the important thing is you have a man on the inside to tank it for him.
Yes, he could tank it. But I have a feeling Dax knows bigger, more famous people than I do. I'm getting people that I'm friends with. I got you, of course. But, you know, Dax is very close friends with Bradley Cooper, who I worked with. And, you know, he could get his wife. Hey, I can't get a guest this week. Would you mind being on the show again today?
Yeah, we're all in the cabal of ultra white guys with sandy messed up hair. There's like you, me, Dax, Bradley Cooper, who we've got to throw Aaron Paul in there. Like, it's just like all of us the same.
Does Aaron Paul have a podcast?
No, but he should. He's a terrific guy. But this is, you know, you and I are so, our careers are so parallel because we've been doing this for so long.
And I don't think people realize that. Or maybe they do.
I don't know. I mean, we talked about it on your podcast, but the first time I met you was when you were doing Zoe Duncan, Jack and Jane.
Right, and you were dating...
I was dating Jacinda.
Jacinda Barry,
she had a guest arc on that show.
Yes.
And, you know, we were all just like bratty 23 or 4-year-olds.
And they were telling us, I was 27 years old, and they're like, this is the next Seinfeld. This is the young Seinfeld. This is going to be... They put so much money
on the WB?
And they put so much money, and we were on billboards and subways.
Network doesn't even exist anymore.
And it doesn't exist anymore. And I remember going, at that time in your career when you're younger, you believe things people tell you. You're going to be a huge star. You are the best at... And you're like, hey... But then you realize quickly that's not the case. I'm not a big star. The show lasted a season.
Yeah, people just say things. Your agent, you know, like all the producers. It's like I'm at a point now where someone goes, "This is going to be." I go, "You don't have to say that for me.
Stop.
Let's just make it, and we'll see. We'll see how it does."
Yeah. I even did it to you on a freaking podcast. I emailed them back and said, "Chris is one of the best podcasts ever." I didn't need to tell him that.
Well, no, I appreciated that.
To hear it.
That was very personal, though. That was very sweet.
It was personal.
But you know what I find is that it's have you noticed that it's not that you're not optimistic per se, but just we get very
complacent,
very realistic and not negative, but you know, just like, well, you know, because my wife asks me all the time, hey, you're working on this thing. Are you excited? And I go, well, I don't know if excited. I mean, like, yes, I'm philosophically excited about this, but the day-to-day process, I just need to just do it and see how it goes. Like,
right.
I can't, like, I don't give in that much to, like, oh, my God, we're doing, you know, it's like, I got work to do. We got to make this happen, you know.
That's
like,
a smart way to think, though. I think that's an intelligent approach to doing it, because you don't want to get carried away. You don't want to think, hey, this is going to be a huge success. You want to sort of just say, hey, step one, let's just do the job.
Let's just do it and see how it goes.
And it's hard. I think I do that. I've become really lazy. I think when I was younger, I said, there was a point in my life where I thought I was going to be a huge star. Okay. I think somewhere in your life you probably thought that.
You mean like Bradley Cooper star?
I thought there was something about me.
Yeah.
And that at least got me paid for some jobs.
Are you an only child?
Middle child.
Middle child.
But I was called dummy a lot.
Oh, shit.
So that pushed me. No, I think, I wasn't supposed to amount to anything. I grew up in a small town, and if you ask anybody from that hometown, Michael Rosenbaum, if you ask three people or 10 people, 9 of them would say, who?
Right.
And one would say, no way. That little dude, that weird little dude that said jokes that no one laughed at?
Yeah.
It's still telling those same jokes.
I know. I haven't changed either.
Once I got out and I found what I thought I was good at, what I was accepted doing, like it took me to do a play. This is a stupid story, but I've told this. I was doing drama and I took drama class because it was an easy A. And you didn't have to do much. The teacher rarely showed up.
Sure.
My senior year, Mrs. Paternoster said, I can't let you take advanced drama, which is pretty much drama, but you've taken it. It's the fourth year.
Did you go to Catholic school?
No. Why does Paternoster sound Catholic?
Well, it's Latin.
Really?
Yeah, it literally means our Father in Latin.
Why do you know?
Because I took Latin.
What Mrs. Paternoster, her name means what?
Our Father.
Our Father.
Yeah. That's the like if you say the Our Father prayer in Latin, it's Pater Noster qui es in Caeli. Like you, it's
wow.
Pater means father, and Noster is a form of a possessive pronoun.
Chris, I'm a Jew, and I'm a bad Jew. I'm the last person you want to fucking ask about that.
I can't believe I just asked you. Mr. Rosenbaum, did you go to Catholic school?
Hell no, but all my friends were Catholic. I had horns.
Yeah, I find Judaism and Catholicism are very philosophically similar in the sense that, I mean, I know that the religious tenets are different, but the economy of guilt is very, very similar.
Is it?
Both.
Jews don't have more guilt?
No, I think it's, but you know, my mom, very strong Roman Catholic, her best friend, very strong Jewish woman. Very, very, they're very, very similar, lovely, similar, but you know, oh, okay, you know, if you rather do that than spend time with your mother, you know, it's like that.
Oh.
It's like, so anyway, so that's why I asked. Paternoster.
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 What's the correct pronunciation, really?
Well, there's, no one really knows how Latin was necessarily spoken. However, there are church pronunciations and there are Roman pronunciations. And church pronunciations sound a little more like Romance languages. Like they sound a little more Spanish, Italian. Roman pronunciations are different. They have long vowels and hard consonants. It doesn't matter. But anyway, that's why I asked. So
Mrs. Paternoster finally said you have to audition for a play if you're going to take advanced drama.
Yes.
And I needed the A. I wasn't a bright kid. Like my parents made abundantly clear. And I auditioned for Grease. Who didn't, right? And I was the Vince Fontaine, the DJ audition, and I got the part somehow.
You were Vince Fontaine. You could have been a Danny Zuko.
But I didn't have the voice, really. I didn't have the looks. I was an awkward-looking kid. I was small. I was fragile. But I still remember the lines. Hey, this is the main brain, Vince Fontaine, spinning the stacks of wax here at the House of Wax, WAXX, cruising time, 1026, sharpshooters, picket of the week, a brand new one, shooting up the charts like a rocket by the Veldu Rays, going out to Ronnie and Sheila, the new kids down at Mom's school store, and especially to little Don and something, whatever. I almost got it. Anyway, I remember that because I was so nervous that I remember doing this, but I remember the next day in school, kids that never talked to me, the popular kids, this guy Chris Pro, he might be listening now. He said, hey, you were really funny in that play. And I thought right then, not being me. What he meant was me being someone else was accepted.
That's fascinating.
So,
but I understand it.
Do you get it?
Yes.
It's like, and then I went to college and all of a sudden I realized, wow, I'm doing something right. Not, I shouldn't be me. I should do as much acting as I can. I wish this play lasted 24 hours because there was something about that I just felt when I got on stage, it just was easier.
But don't you see how Darwinian that is, emotionally Darwinian that is, that you get fed something that you crave, and you're like, I need to do more and more and more and more and more, and then you just evolve in that direction. Because you are, by the way, that guy, it'd be really interesting to find out what he's up to now. It's very likely, because, you know, listen.
He's a lawyer.
Is he?
he's sort of, yeah, he's doing well.
Did you talk to him?
You know, I go back, you know, he wasn't like, I can't say he was always a dick to me. He just really, I wasn't, you remember the scene in 16 Candles where they're doing the pull-ups?
Of course.
And remember when she says, you know, he goes, you know, Samantha? He's like, I don't think about it.
He goes, what do you think of Samantha Baker?
I don't.
And then they're just standing.
Because she's a freshman or a sophomore, right? They're doing their pull-ups.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, I think I was that guy. I was like, he sort of knew me. He just doesn't think about me.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, he was like, wow, what you did was pretty good.
Oh, it'd be great if every so often he's like, hey, that Superman show, you were pretty funny. Like maybe every once in a while, that's all he knows how to communicate with you.
Yeah, the bald look, really.
Hey, it's pretty good.
My God, yeah. But, you know, I still, to this day, still feel that way. When I'm doing something, I feel, when I'm not being me, I've talked to you about that. You know, on my podcast, you don't feel that way. You could be, you're very grounded. I think you're way more grounded than I am, but it probably took you time to get there.
I don't know how grounded I am. I certainly feel chaotic and stressed. I feel like my big struggle is to not, because I assume we're both very similar in the sense that our brains are just spinning a million miles an hour all the time.
Yeah.
And so the challenge is like, how to not bring that into my marriage. You know, like, how do you keep that separate? Not bring, because, you know, whether or not stress is good or bad, if you're thinking about a lot of things, like, stress is stress.
Right.
Good stress and bad stress, your brain, it's still like, if your brain's still trying to process a lot of stuff. So that's still a challenge. So I don't know if I'm like super grounded. I'm still like, I don't know what's going on. If this is going to work, it's probably all going to fall
apart. But you're always confident about things, right? Do you ever doubt yourself?
I mean, I feel like I live in a constant. Yeah, of course. I mean, I don't feel confident about, I sort of feel like, well, I'll just keep trying stuff. And I don't know if it's going to work or not. And if it does, great. But I always think, you know, like if I email people and they don't write you back and I go, that person hates me now. I feel like
Do that?
Of course.
Why do we do this?
I feel like I have tremendously low self-esteem.
I do too. But why? Why do we do this? It's this perpetual cyclical thing where it's like, I'm confident. And then you're like, no, you're not.
It just goes back to childhood.
But how do you fix it?
Well,
or do you just embrace it and fucking move on?
Part of it's embracing it. And I feel like, you know, the first big challenge of our young adult lives is, it's like we can't evolve until we figure out how to make peace with all the shit our tiny, you know, puberty-stricken brains were saddled with. We can't evolve until we get past as much of that as possible. And then we can evolve as people. But some people just spend their whole lives locked in that little cul-de-sac.
I know they do. And I really feel like I don't. I think through therapy and I think through dealing with my friends who are somewhat mature, you, James Gunn, people around me who I respect. And like, you know, when I talk to them, it's sort of like, hey, I acknowledge my past. I acknowledge that, hey, maybe my dad wasn't the greatest dad. Hey, maybe my mom was all over the place. Hey, I didn't get any attention. Hey, all these things happened to me as a kid. I acknowledge them and I forgive and I'm fine. But somehow I still go back to it.
Well, because it's what you learned at a very emotionally developmental time in your life. And so, you know, those are foundational. I mean, it's like it's foundational in a way. So you really do have to relearn or embrace it. But I also think that sometimes there's an ideal that we expect, like a switch is going to flick and then all of a sudden we're going to go, I'm different. Like, you may not have the perspective on yourself. I mention this on the podcast every couple of years, but I watched Parenthood again last night, which is one of the...
Dax or the movie?
The movie.
The movie, great movie.
One of the best and really most poignant. And it's a beautiful, sad story just about life. And also I get sad about it because, like, this is in 1989, so all those little kids are, like, in their 30s and 40s now. But So I was like, oh, now they're... But, you know, but I've quoted it many times, but Jason Robards has this really great speech to Steve Martin where he goes, you never spike the ball. You never cross the finish line. And so this idea of thinking that you're going to slide into home base and everyone's gonna, I mean, you can have that. That's not to say
there are moments.
That's not to say that there aren't victories and there aren't moments, but I think we have a very cinematic ideal in our life, in our minds about what it's gonna be or feel like. And I think, you know, if you really just kind of took a step back, you might go, oh, actually, I think I am doing okay. I think I actually have achieved a level of thing, you know. But I think it's just about being more peaceful and embracing, like you said, rather than feeling like I know so much. I feel like the more you know, the less you know.
Yeah, and I think you're right. Also, the more you think about everybody has to feel this way. There's nobody out there. You look around, you're like, this guy's so successful. He's so confident. He's just like nothing.
It's bullshit.
It's bullshit. There's got to be, when you're uncomfortable at a party, there's got to be another 50 people at that party that are uncomfortable.
At least. And if someone isn't, I kind of feel like, what's wrong with them?
I'm uncomfortable.
Are they a sociopath?
I'm uncomfortable at my own parties. I'll throw a party. I throw a Halloween party, which I invited you, but I know you were out. Or
yeah,
something.
We were out. Yeah.
But I, you know, I'm nervous at my own parties.
Sure.
I'm uncomfortable. I got to say hello to everyone. I got to please everyone. You can't even have a good time. Why do I have these parties?
Well, guys like you and I, which sounds like we're very similar. I was a very small, awkward kid too, into a lot of weird, nerdy stuff. I mean, we learned that. And again, I wouldn't trade it because I would never have wanted to have been a popular kid who never had to turn inward or develop an internal monologue or become self-aware. And but you know, we just didn't socialize well with other kids or like other kids, and so I think we spend a lot of our adult lives like, do you like me? Please like me. Do you like me?
You know? Yes.
And
it's, and you think that's okay?
I think it is okay. I mean, I think as long as it doesn't
get in the way of your creativity.
That's exactly right. Or get in the way of living your life. I mean, everyone has some kind of flaw. Like, there's no ideal. Everything, you know, it's sort of like the genie bottle. Like, no matter what wish you have, there's going to be some cost or something that's associated with it that you didn't see. And I was like, oh, I wish I were dating that person. Or yeah, I wish I had that. It's like, okay, here's $10 million. Well, now here's all the problems that come with that. Yeah. And here's this person you wanted to date it. But then here's all the problems that come with that. I mean, I'm sure. Can you think of one example of something you thought, oh my God, if I just have this, everything's going to be better. And you got it. And you were like, holy shit. The amount of responsibility and the amount of work and the amount of stress and the amount of problems that come with it. This is fucking not worth it.
It was a Galaga video game, the full-size video game. I said, you know, wow, I've got Galaga. This is my favorite game as a child. And for $800, I could do it. And then there's the maintenance and the cleaning. And
yeah.
It's not all it's got out to be.
And then you don't play with it all the time. You don't play with it all the time.
You leave it alone. It's not there. This is the thing you wanted most.
Yeah.
You wanted this video game. Why aren't you playing it ever? Why is it sitting in a corner?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I sometimes think we don't always know what is best for us because we have I think it's very dangerous to make ego-based decisions.
Sure.
Things that will, you know, again, oh, if I had that car or that dating that person or this, those are all ego decisions. And there's nothing wrong with that as long as you can acknowledge that that's what it is. But if you use those ego decisions to define yourself, the problem with that is that it's a very shallow water and there's a lot of emptiness under that. And if it's not satisfying, it's either going to implode or you're going to keep trying to outdo it. And when you make ego decisions, the first thing to get brutally damaged when it falls apart is your ego. When you are putting your ego on the line, like when you're throwing your ego down on the craps table, that's the first thing that's going to get, you know, that's the first thing that's going to get
taken. I see with my family, I see with a lot of people in my family, it was always about the, you know, if I get this nice car,
right?
Look at this, everybody, I have this nice car. And then a few weeks later, miserable again.
Yeah.
Or a week later, miserable. And so I've learned from my family's mistakes and people around me that, hey, I'm not going to let this define me. I'm not going to, you know, I don't go out. I have the same truck for 5 years. I have a van. I don't need fancy things. I like stupid things like the Golden Girls Clue game just came out.
that's what I want. Stupid at all. That's fantastic.
Yes. Oh. And that's what I want. These are things that make me happy. I like little gadgets. I like little things. I don't exceed like – my family, a lot of times, they can't even afford these things, and they buy them, and then they're in debt, and then they call me. Hey, I'm like, hey, look, man.
Sophia did it in the living room with the pasta dish. That's
but where did Blanche do it, and with what? With what?
She did it in the butt with the entire wait staff at the Happy Crow, which is the pub that I don't know where they go. But I do think that it's okay to have nice things, but just as long as – I mean, it's like, oh, it's fun to get nice things. It feels good, but just as long as it's like – it doesn't define you. And then as long as you can have that attitude with it, and I think it's
funny because I just posted something on Facebook and I don't get sappy and I don't get like, you know, I usually do funny things or work or, and I just said something like, hey, you know, I just want to say happy Thanksgiving to everybody. And, you know, I spend a lot of time, you know, you see these work Facebook posts about, hey, watch this, listen to my new podcast, listen to this and, you know, funny things. And, you know, and I talked about something about, you know, I always really got on myself, was upset with myself for being a people pleaser, always trying to get approval,
sure,
always trying to make people happy, always trying to make people smile. But then somewhere along the line, I just sort of embraced it like, hey, there's really nothing wrong with making people happy.
Right.
And making people smile. But if that's all, sometimes it's too much. Like you got to separate, hey, I'm not trying to get your approval. I'm being funny and hope you laugh. And if you don't.
Well, because then that boils down to, are you doing it? Like, are you trying to make people happy for them or for you? You know?
Right. And do you get something out of that? Is that why you're doing
and
it?
And I think the right answer is like, well, it's okay to have a combination of both.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's all right to get something out of it, but then also, you know, like make people happy at the same time.
I agree.
When did you, I have always wanted to ask you about, because you got a nice head of hair, what it was like. What it was like to live as a guy who shaved his head for a while.
Katie, right, Katie? But I told you earlier that you heard out there. I forgot to put product in my hair, and my assistant Jess out there was like, "Your hair is way too high." And so I've been a little self-conscious.
That's a good assistant who will say to you, "Your hair's too high."
And some people might look at my head and go, "Oh, he was bald, so now he's overcompensating with the giant James Gunn, double James Gunn look, yeah, double gun."
Your hair's not that high, by the
way. It's not that high?
No,
but I am.
You know, it's funny. No, I'm not. It's funny. It's funny how. You know, you look at your face all day, so you're going to zero in on every little, like,
every little
oh
thing.
My God, I have a thing here on my cheek, God, and everyone's going to, but most people, 99% of the people in the world don't, they just sort of see all
they
of
don't see
once.
What I see in the mirror? You no. really don't think so?
No.
They don't see the dark spots, which some people call liver spots, but I call them a little sun damage?
No.
They don't see that? No. You don't really see that?
No.
Right now you're looking, so you've probably
I'm looking for it.
You don't
but
see
I
them.
Still don't see it.
Okay, I'm 45. I'm going to start getting them. They're starting to happen. Katie, you're young. You don't have to deal with this right now.
Katie's 17.
Katie, Jesus, Katie.
No, she's not.
No, you're not. You don't have to tell us your age. How old are you? 31. Oh, you're young.
She'll get, you got a ton of time.
When
Katie.
I was 14, you were zero, Katie.
0 years old.
But you asked me how it felt to be a bald man.
Well, I'm just like. You know, because I always thought the most fun thing to do would be I had to shave my head for House of a Thousand Corpses, and it was really
yeah.
fun. Did you like? But you,
but not for 7 years, ten
not
months
for
a year.
7 years,
10 months a year. It was me. It was like, let me tell you something. I was so that whole story about even getting the part on Smallville was so terrifying because first of all, I thought it was going to be this goofy show that no one like it would just be these caricatures, and I didn't think it was going to be that. You know, shot really well, and
right.
You're thinking Smallville, Superman, and Lex are friends. The yeah. WB,
right?
You don't expect it to be good,
right?
When you're hearing about it, and they're like, "No, this is gonna be a big show." And I remember they wanted to see me, and I go, "I'm not. I don't know about this." And my friend's like, "You, Lex Luthor, did your goofball? You're not Lex Luthor." I had the spiky hair. It was Zoe Duncan, Jack and Jane. Right after,
right.
I probably met you a couple weeks after. And finally they said, "Hey, they want to see you." And they said, like, 700 guys are doing, you know, audition. And I go, 700? And I said, and I didn't care at this point. When you don't care, it's weird. Things come to you when you don't care as much.
Because you don't need them.
You don't need them. And look, and I needed, like, I didn't know this, but this would be the best thing I had ever done when I did get casted. But I remember them, I go, "Just tell me what they're doing wrong, these other guys." And they said, "Well, we want you to be charismatic, a sense of danger, intelligent, a little bit conniving, all these things, like three or four things." And they had three pages of sides. That's it, three. And I'm fencing with Clark Kent in the opening scene. And I circled, "Be dangerous here. Be charismatic here. Be funny here." And that's what I did. And I went in there, and I remember it was the first time where a casting director, usually when you go in these casting rooms, you know this, "Okay, sit down, blah, 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 say your name, here's the lighting, it's all set up." Well, she had me sitting down. Well, I hadn't rehearsed that way. And I wasn't thinking sitting down, I was thinking powerful. And I said, no, I think I want to stand up. She goes, "Well, I don't have it lit." And I go, "How long will it take you?" And I wasn't being a dick, but I was just like, I got to do this my way.
Right.
And she goes, "Well, give me 15 minutes. And she wasn't really happy with me. And I went in there and I gave the audition of my life. And I just didn't care and I was confident. And I walked out and I go, "Hey." And I always have this thing where afterwards I rip up the sides
throw
and
away.
Throw them in the trash. I'm sure other people do that, but I do that because it's my way of saying, clear your head.
Yeah,
I'm done.
Forget about this. Move on.
Yes, move on. And my agent says, "Hey, the studio wants to meet you." I go, "Nope." Again.
Why?
And this is the developmental sort of... The child in me that didn't develop and something happened as a kid,
right.
That I was the fear and the approval and the nerves and all that. I was like, I can never be that good again. And especially like going in front of a studio, I go, I'll never be this good. He calls me back, goes, "The network and the studio will be in there. It's just one more audition. This is it." I go, "No, that's worse. That's fucking worse. I'm not doing it."
You came back to me with worse terms.
He goes, "Why are you doing this? Why are you self-sabotaging? Why?" I go, "Listen, I will never be that good as I was in the room. You tell them to just rewind the tape and watch the fuck." I swear I did. And I wasn't a dick. I go, "Please make it happen." And about a week later, he calls me and goes, "You got the job."
That's hilarious.
You're Lex Luthor. And I go, oh my God, I am never going to, they're going to fire me.
And you probably would have, you, it's very likely you would have lost the job.
I would have lost the job. I knew in my head that I was as good as I could do it. It's like one of those things where you know this, when you do stand up, you go up and you have two sets.
Yep.
You have one, and the first one, you go, oh my God, that was amazing. And something random happened. And you already know that the next set's not going to be half as good as that, no matter what, because something magical happened, right?
Well, yes. But I also view every show as a unique organism. So it doesn't, I don't really think about it in those terms. I think, you know, any random collection of people can be a completely different, so it's not, so shows can be better in different ways.
Right.
Sometimes shows are riffier, sometimes the audience is better, sometimes they're polite, sometimes they're bad, sometimes I'm bad. You know, like it just, like there's, I don't really, it's not quite as binary to
so
me.
So you sort of take it as it's a new thing. This is, the next one's going to be different, it's what it is, and that's a whole different beast.
Absolutely.
That's a smart way to think.
Absolutely.
See, that's part of my problem. I think about, oh, I'm doing the same thing. In fact, it's hard for me because I'm new at this. You've been doing stand-up your whole life, and a lot of these guys, I'm like, yeah, but once you do a set, I feel like if I go do another set somewhere else, I'm still doing the same material. Like, yes, people do the same material for years.
Yeah.
This is what you do.
It's part of the... part of the artistry of stand-up is not having to do a whole new set every time, but it's...
getting it better.
It's
better.
It's like being a sculptor and just like, you know, like making the details better, cutting out the fat, evolving the set.
Yeah.
And also being able to present material that you've said before is fresh and new. That's a completely other...
you're absolutely right.
Completely other skill set. You know, that being said, I riff a lot in my sets because it makes it different for me.
Right.
But, you know, but every set's a little bit different. But going back to what you were saying before, I think nature, as sentient as nature can be, views need as a weakness. So when you said like, well, when you don't need stuff, it comes to you. It's like, yeah, because, you know, if you think from an evolutionary standpoint, if an organism needs something, then it's weak in that area. And so other organisms might be like, oh, we got to avoid that thing because it's needy.
Right.
Because if it needs something, it can't provide, you know, it doesn't have the strongest DNA to keep the, you know, if I'm being really reductionist about it.
Right.
I'm sure none of this is actually true, but this is just how I view it. And so it's very difficult to pretend like you don't need something because you can't fake that. But I think it really just comes from having options, you know, of like, well, I could do this or I don't have to do this, you know, and that takes a lot of, because need leads to desperation. When you're really in real need, you just get very desperate.
Yeah.
And it just like, it, people just absorb it.
Isn't that something?
It's just like,
how when you need like something, people can see it from a mile away.
Yeah.
And it's, I feel that's true.
And they don't want to fucking have to deal with your,
no,
whatever it is that you need. They got their own shit that they need. They can't focus on you.
That's true.
And so they just, it is really just like a social repellent, you know, like real desperate need.
I wanted to go back to you. I didn't finish your question. I got to the beginning, but you asked me about how does it feel with the hair thing.
Fine. We have tons of time.
And well, the reason I want to bring it up is because I was nervous. You don't know what your head looks like when you shave it. Right? You don't know. Well, you do.
I do now.
You do now.
Yeah.
Katie, you have no idea. If you shaved your head, you would say there might be like a divot. Something happened as a child. You fell. Somebody hit you
or
in the head.
A tiny little person who's just grown
yes.
up. Undeveloped twin.
See?
Just hanging out on
your
scalp.
As they shaved my head for the first time, this was the pilot. I already been cast. I didn't. They were shaving my head. And I was going to act as Lex Luthor. I didn't have a choice. If I was somehow missing half my scalp somehow,
sure.
There was some weird disease. And I shaved it and I was like, not bad, not bad. I remember just staring at myself, not saying a word. One of the few moments where I didn't talk. And then they're just shaving my head. Like, Natalie. And she keeps shaving my head and I'm looking. And I'm like, not bad. And I turn around and I saw a reflection mirror of my, it's called an occipital bone.
Yeah, your occipital bone, yeah, in the back.
And mine is a lot larger than most.
Yeah, it is.
It's a large occipital bone. And I was nervous about this. I said, I'm a freak. I'm not, they're going to fire me. They're going to see behind me, and I, you know, this is the WB. You have to be somewhat attractive to be on it. I didn't think I was attractive. I already had issues.
They have a no protruding occipital bone policy. There's a policy. It's very clear in the paperwork.
They did have that. And
Michigan J. Frog, like, no, double, double, double.
That was his name. Bone.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh my God. Yeah, you remember all these things. Well, anyway, I remember shooting the pilot and thinking, they're going to fire me. Nobody sees me as Lex Luthor. I can't be intimidating and scary and brilliant. I'm just not. These are all the things that I'm not in real life. This is absolutely all pretend. And are they going to buy all of it? I hope the lighting's good. I hope the way I delivered these lines are good. And I just had to let it go. And I remember thinking I was going to get fired. They're going to replace me with some chisel chin guy, and this is it. And I remember David Nutter, who ended up directing a lot of the Game of Thrones episodes. He's a brilliant director. He directed the pilot. And he called me in to do ADR. What's ADR stand for? Additional.
Automated Dialogue Replacement.
Automated. I wasn't even close. Automated Dialogue Replacement. Are you sure? Yeah. Not Additional Dialogue Recording? That sounds better.
We can look it up, but I think it's automated dialogue replacement. It could be also, it could be one of those things that's like three or four things depending on who you ask. But when I used to do ADR for the cartoons I worked on, it would say automated dialogue.
You probably are right. Yeah. ADR.
It's automated or automatic dialogue replacement.
8-0 Hardwick. So
it's taking up room for something else that could be useful in my brain.
So anyway, Dave Nutter called me in and he goes, I want you to see the opening of the pilot, just the opening scene. And I watched it and I had a little tear in my eye. It was the first time that I felt like I had done something that was pretty decent. Because in the past I called my father and I go, I'm doing this movie. He's like, what kind of movie is it? Oh, no. It's an independent movie, so it's not a real movie.
Well,
no.
Yes,
I mean, it is, but who's in it? The new yeah, so it's not, you're right, it's not a real movie. I've talked myself out of it. You know, it was that kind of thing.
That's the voice in your head.
That's the voice in my head, and nothing was ever good enough, nothing was ever, and then I watched this, and I never, after that one call to my dad, I never called him about that stuff again. In fact, to this day, I never tell my parents or anybody what I'm doing. Never. My brother goes, what's going on? I'm doing this thing. Oh, really? When did that happen?
Try to explain a podcast to your dad. Was it like a radio show? Well, it is.
It is. Well, who's
so it's not real. Who's
in it? Who's going to listen?
I don't know who that is.
Who's going to listen to your radio
show? Chris
Howard,
I don't know who that is.
Did you study radio?
It's not real unless I know who it is. And there's a company that I've heard of that's paying you to do it. Otherwise,
all we hear is Radio Gaga. It's David Bowie, Katie. You know that song? Sorry, that was belittling. I shouldn't have said that. No, of course you know David Bowie. So I watched it, and I had a tear in my eye, and I called my parents, who were together at the time, and I said, I think I've done something right. I think that this is going to be a big, big show, and it's someone might recognize me from it if I don't get fired for my occipital bone.
Was it still WB at that point? It had not become CW yet.
I think it was the WB. Then it came to CW, and I prayed to God, just let me be on a network with more than two letters.
Because I think that Smallville was one of that first wave of like genre shows for a younger audience.
Mm-hmm.
That it's kind of like in the vein of where Supernatural is. It's like this has a massive, passionate fan base of young people.
Yeah.
Who it's like their generation.
And we didn't have social media.
Right.
I always tell people I'd have millions of followers too if Smallville was around now. But I'll take my 130. You know what I mean? It was a phenomenon. It was the first of many. I'm very proud to say that it was really. I not to say it made television superheroes cooler, but it just the way it, how would I articulate that? It was shot in a certain way. They took it seriously. They tried to make the acting good. The effects were great. They still hold up. I think the quality of the show was just exceptional.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, you know, you could be great in something that just looks like shit, wasn't that good, and no one sees. But very few times in your career, if any, where all those things line up, or it's like I'm in something where everything's pretty good.
Yeah.
So I have to step up my game.
Right.
I felt like the other actors were good, and the effects are good, and people are and like it was sort of a pressure, but a good pressure. It was nice to be on something that was good because I had been on a lot of things that weren't, and still am to this day. I keep doing things that aren't great, but I keep striving for greatness.
Well, and also, you know, I mean, you're not, it's not like you're done.
No.
You could work for another 40 years if you wanted to.
You know, I'm insatiable as hell. Nothing's ever good enough. And I think you're the same way. You could do a million things. And like we said, we don't get carried away anymore. It's more, my therapist calls it, I think I told you, the colander effect. You know, a colander.
Yeah.
It's what you put spaghetti in and you put water and the water goes right through it.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like you feel this is, nothing's really sustained.
Sure.
That sort of like, you're great. It used to be when you're younger. It's like, I am. But it goes, it's fleeting.
So
it
we're just
sort of
left with wet pasta.
Wet pasta.
Yeah.
And what's the hard pasta when it's too hard called?
Al dente.
Al dente. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it. And Pater Noster means
Our Father.
Right. And this is $25,000 pyramid.
Things you say in a podcast.
it is. It's $25,000 pyramid. This is rhubarb. Yes. Yeah.
Well, I heard a great story about Dick Clark, just to go about pyramid. When he took that show, you know, he was a big radio guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he was doing all this. He was getting all this stuff going. He was kind of getting his own production entity going. And they offered him Pyramid, which he was not a producer on. And they didn't really offer him a lot of money to do it. And his representatives were like, "Ah, maybe you shouldn't take this. It's not." And he goes, "How many times is it? You know, what's the order?" And it was like a huge order to do Pyramid. And he goes, "Take it. I don't care what the money is." And they're like, "Really?" And he goes, "I will be on television every day, and that will grow all that." Like, he had the foresight to know that it wasn't about, you know, that short-term gain of, you know, a few hundred thousand extra dollars, wow, or whatever, that it meant so much to his overall, like, he just had a big picture, a bird's eye view of everything, and he knew that would raise the water level on the rest of his business. And, you know, Dick Clark Productions sold for what, like $1 billion? I mean, it was some crazy amount of money.
The first thing I would have thought about is, that's a lot of work. Do I have to do that every day?
Every day.
I think for me is like, and that's incredible.
Not every day, but they gang shoot those. You know, you shoot like,
oh, you shoot like five a day.
Yeah.
And then you're done for like a month.
you're done for like 9 months.
That is key.
Yeah.
That's, you know, but you're very current with your podcast. Like, this will air when?
I don't know. When's this going to air, Katie?
But
month,
you don't get backed up. You know, at first I thought, let's do 10 in 2 weeks and then have a couple months off. Do you ever do that?
No, because we've had some that we've had to hold on to for a little bit longer sometimes. And right, it's only because, you know, a lot of times when people agree to do the podcast, they have, you know, their promotion cycle has needs.
Right,
it's
right,
like,
right.
Well,
right,
this has to go, yeah, up on
it. Coming out.
It has to go up because the thing opens Friday and they really need it. Okay, fine. And so then we kind of do our best to accommodate everyone. But in general, just because these are so conversational and not really planned, sometimes you can feel, you know, people, when we'll post one that we recorded a couple months ago, sometimes we'll refer to things that were happening and people go, "When the fuck did you?
What are you talking about?"
Like, well, this was a couple. So it's really just about the freshness.
Yeah.
You know, it's really just about the freshness date.
That's true.
You know, the sell by this date for optimal freshness. And so we try. But then also, we would have to record so I just can't record a lot at once. We just, like, your brain gets scrambled.
Yeah.
It's not, I love having these conversations, but it does require a tremendous amount of focus. Like, if I did any more, like, I've done three in a day before, and by the end of the third one, I can't think straight.
I get anxiety by the third one.
Well, because
I'm just a little bit like, oh, what the fuck? I'm freaking out.
Even as conversational as they are, when you are technically the host of a thing, you still have to drive it and drive.
It's an energy.
It takes
exhausting.
A lot of energy. It takes a lot of focus. Yeah.
You know, and you just had a workout right before this.
Just had a workout.
You just worked out.
Feeling fit. Oh, my God. I have not been – I've been eating healthy for the last couple months, like really healthy because my cholesterol is high. And
is that genetic?
I don't – my dad's cholesterol was high, but he ate a lot of shitty food and drank. So he had to get his down through diet, and I'm doing the same. It's slowly going down, but I cut out – I don't really eat a lot of extra processed sugar.
Do you eat a lot of bread?
I've reintroduced it into my diet a little bit, but not a lot. But bread's very bad for cholesterol, by the way, because your body just stores it as fat and sugar, like all the starchy stuff. But I have it a little bit, not a ton. But for Thanksgiving,
it was also
my birthday, so there was birthday cake.
Yeah, happy birthday.
Thank you. And donuts. Someone sent Blue Star donuts, which are some of my favorites.
And you ate all of it.
I ate a cake and a donut and some peanut butter balls and some fucking tea cakes. And I was so sick the next day.
Really?
And I'm still recovering from it a little bit. Like, my body, like, once I took that out of my diet and tried to have it again, it did not. I am definitely feeling the effects. And also my age.
You know, I just, I don't have high cholesterol. I come from a family that's, like, pretty healthy. Everything in my blood, but for some reason I get fatigued. And I think fatigue has to do something with a little maybe anxiety or a little stress.
It's probably stress and mental energy.
Did you have anxiety?
Always.
A lot. You've had a lot of anxiety. Did anxiety cause you a lot of fatigue?
Of course. Because it's your brain is constantly engaged. You know, anxiety is a lot of what if questions. It's a lot of what if this happens? What if I don't do this? What if I fail? What if I die? What if I'm sick? What if this person hates me? You know, it's a lot of... It's like your brain is trying to prepare for all of these eventualities. But your brain's trying to prepare for all the eventualities. And
it comes out like constantly of these thoughts, right?
Yeah.
Stupid.
And when your brain is that engaged all the time, it does take a toll on, because your body's expending energy to go through all of it.
Well, for me, I look at you, someone who does everything. Like you do, you do so much and you're married.
It's true.
You have this huge career and you're married. But for me, I'm like, you know, I'm not married. I have a dog.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love my family. I have friends. They're my family.
It's legal in some states.
Right. Indiana, where I grew up.
Yep.
But I feel like I want to do tons of stuff, but it's just like I have to prioritize. I feel like when you do too much that it just – then you're not being as great as you can.
Right.
And if you just do a little less.
Right.
And focused on the things that are important.
Well, that's why if you really want to kind of scale up – the amount of things you're working on, that's where you have to collaborate, and that's where you have to delegate, and that's where you have to work with, you know, really great people who are smarter at doing things. Like that's why, you know, yeah, you can't do everything because it does compromise the quality of all the stuff, but also you can't do everything. Like you're not good at everything. No one's good at everything.
Really?
And other people are good at...
Wait a minute.
I know.
Katie's pretty good at a lot of things.
Katie's great at everything, but most people aren't. And so, you know, you just have to recognize what you're really good at and what you want. You have to figure out what you want to do and how does the Venn diagram overlap with what you're good at or what you think you can be good at, what you can learn. And so that's how I'm able to work on a lot of different stuff is that you know, like, I'm not running the animation company every day. My partner, right. Shadi, is running that because that's what she's amazing
at. And you make that clear, like, when you say, hey, if I'm going to do this, I'm not going to do a lot of the work.
Well, I think it's, you know, it's twofold. Number one, it's not having the energy. It's not having the energy to physically do everything. And it's also recognizing that it's not healthy to micromanage people. It's not healthy for them.
Right.
Because a lot of the time, if you're going to hire people, the thing that always frustrates me about some productions is that they'll hire you and they'll go, we like what you do. We want you to do this. And they'll hire you and they'll start telling you how to do it. And you're like, well, why did you hire me? You could have just hired a chimp.
Right.
You know?
And did you go through that stage though, where you were micromanaging at some point in your life?
Yeah, but it just requires too much energy. And then also you don't get the best out of people if you don't allow them. Cause I just assume, mm-hmm. I automatically assume like, well, if you have a skill set, you're better at that thing than I am. So if I'm going to hire you, I trust that you know what you're doing. And for the most part, I might give notes every once in a while, but they're flexible notes. If you feel strongly about something that I say and you don't agree with it, then you don't always have to follow it. You know, like just make a case. And I try to listen to people and let them be the best them that they can be. Because then if you're trying to micromanage everyone, then everyone's just trying to be a version of you. And that's limiting to them when
sure.
they could be so much better than you being themselves in whatever area it is. So that's why it's good to, you know, collaboration is good. And also, you know, you form a unique chemical compound with every person or organization that you work with. And so that's really fun. Interesting. Do you work with a lot of different people or do you try to do everything yourself?
I work with a lot of, I have a writing partner. She lives in Minnesota now. We've written a couple scripts together. We're working on stuff, but I let her sort of like when we have this new thing of notes, I'm like, I don't have the time to go through these notes. I'm going to help you with the notes. But then once we have a plan, can you go take care
yeah,
of
it? Yeah, and it's really important to understand.
And I know that it's better for her. She has a little more time and she loves it a lot more
good.
Than I do.
Well, it's also important to understand like what the agreement is going into each collaboration.
Yeah.
Like you can't.
Yes.
You can't just go to sleep and let someone else do all the work. It's like you have to understand if they're doing this, how is my skill set complementary and additive?
100%. That's what I do that. I pretty much say, listen, I'm going to make all the calls. I'm going to get the meetings. I'm going to do this. You're going to help more on the rewrites and things like that.
Yeah.
But I'm going to try and really get this made.
Yeah.
And I know she can't exactly do that.
Right.
She doesn't have that sort of, but she's a great writer too.
Right.
And so we work really well together.
That's cool. What are you working on? You said you're working on a show.
That's a horror movie. I have a new draft of that horror movie.
You do?
Yes.
Send it.
So I will. It's really cool. It's dark. It's serial killer-ish.
Fantastic.
Love story. But I'm writing a show right now. Eric Tannenbaum, who used to run Sony, and he produced Two and a Half Men.
Oh, yeah, I know Eric.
He produced me on Impastor, which I did for 2 years. And he's like, I want to do something. So I'm writing a show sort of based on me. If I didn't have any success or any money or anything, is loosely based on me and kind of a guy who's just trying to find happiness in life.
Yep.
And, you know, I got some great people attached to that and got a movie called The Neighbor with Bill Fichtner.
Oh, he's fucking great.
He's great. He was very intimidating. I had to have lunch with him because the director goes, Bill wants to meet with you before we...
I'm like... 2011 podcast, I think, Bill Fichtner.
Really? Mm-hmm. Bill's great. He was the blind guy in Contact.
Yep.
He's been in everything. The guy's been in Prison Break.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And I was intimidated. It was one of those things where I remember sitting down, having lunch with him. He's like, I remember him just looking at me like I could tell he's judging me.
Right.
Like he's just, but he's a nice guy. He's just like... Yeah. Like, you know, that look that you give someone where you're like, yeah, you're not getting the part.
At what point were you like, what is it? What are you looking at?
I'm like, I actually just said it. For me, I'm compelled to just, whatever I'm feeling, sometimes I just say it. Like, you're making me fucking nervous. And he's like, he looks at me, he starts laughing. And I'm like, oh, I'm trying to make you think that I'm this guy for the character. But at the same time, I don't want you to think I'm, he's like, no. And at the end, he called me. He says, dude, you want to do it? I love it. And we did it, and I remember doing the first scene with him, and it was just like one of those things where he's really nice. It's one of these actors and you look up to, and then you do a scene and you almost have to prove yourself and like, I can fucking do this. I'm an actor. And then you do it, and then he sort of looks at you and goes, okay, and then everything's cool. He just wants I'm telling you, that's like I've had that sort of happen with big actors where I'm like, okay, I feel like I have to prove, I'm not proving myself. I just sort of have to just do my fucking work, say my lines, but I feel sort of a respect after.
Yeah.
Like, okay, you don't suck completely. You know what I'm saying? So there's that. But I'm always like, I think everything I do, whether it's this podcast or whether it's whatever, I always want to, you know, be entertaining. You always want to be fun. You always want to, I put too much pressure on myself,
Chris. Oh, yeah. I completely understand. It's because you want, but again, if your motivation is that you want people to like you, you're always going to drive yourself crazy.
Yeah.
Because you can't, it's impossible. But I really do understand it. I feel like I'm really good getting to know people. And then at a certain point, I just feel like I'm annoying and they hate me. I lost them.
Yeah, you know? True.
I lost them.
I've always been one, though. I've had a lot of friends in the industry. And most of the friends I hang out with aren't actors. But I do have, you know, big actor friends. But I always feel like I've always been the same guy. No matter how much you try to change or you try to put the cool persona on.
Yeah.
Or like, hey, I'm mellow. It always comes out. The real you always comes out.
Yes.
And so those people who stick around and go, hey, he's a pretty cool guy.
Right.
That's it. Or I'm going to hire him. He's easy to work with.
Right.
You come out. No matter what. You can't hide who you are. You know what I mean? I mean, Christopher Walken could try to just go, I'm not going to do the voice. I'm like, yeah, right. Now I'm doing it. It's coming out. I'm Christopher Walken, Hardwick. You know, I mean, that's ultimately what happens.
Sophia did it.
In the kitchen, Blanche.
With Dorothy.
Blanche did it with every weapon, everywhere in the house. She took the study. She went to the dining room.
Blanche did it with Dreyfus, the next door neighbor's dog.
Was that the next door neighbor's dog?
Yeah, that was...
Why do you know that?
I don't know. It's just in my brain.
But Dreyfus?
And then he spun off and had Empty Nest.
Name five characters on Different Strokes.
Kimberly.
Yes.
Arnold, Willis, Mr. Drummond, and... and then Charlotte Ray was the original housekeeper who then went on to do Facts of Life.
Mrs. Garrett.
Mrs. Garrett.
It was Mrs. Garrett. Yeah. And then there was Dudley. Dudley Arnold's friend.
Yes, that's when because
that's when it got dark.
Because he started dating, Mr. Drummond started dating that Southern lady, and she had the kid.
Shavar Ross was the actor.
Interesting. Between the two of us, we have covered
different strokes.
A lot of different strokes.
I think that's pretty good.
But then there was a second housekeeper who was like another little old lady.
What was her name?
She was a little old white-haired lady, and I can't remember her name. Her name I cannot remember.
And what was the show with Nell Carter?
Give Me a Break. That was Give Me a Break.
I love that theme song. I would just watch the theme song and then change the channel.
Give me a break. I sure deserve it.
Give me a break.
That's right. I made it to the top. Yeah, I remember that.
Oh, what a great show.
Watch the shit
out of that. Yep. Oh, my gosh. Did you ever watch Little House on the Prairie?
That show bored me because I didn't like pioneer-themed things, and I did, and I just felt like that was a show when I was a kid where, like, I loved The Twilight Zone. Like,
oh, yeah.
I just didn't. Nothing really happened for me on the... I didn't really understand the dense pioneer drama of Little House on the Prairie.
Michael Landon would always somehow make me cry. I watched Highway to Heaven.
Oh, sure.
Did you watch that?
Some, yeah.
I liked a good cry every once in a while.
You know, he's just an angel down here helping people.
Right. I mean, it was a beautiful story.
It's just a lovely, beautiful guy and a beautiful story. But yeah, Little House, I never really... And I watched a lot of comedies, too.
I could tell you five shows you never watched.
Okay.
Dynasty.
Of course I did.
You did?
Of course I did.
Dallas.
Yes.
Falcon Crest.
I did, because my mom watched all those shows.
Jake and the Fat Man?
Yes.
Or was it Big Guy?
Jake and the Fat Man.
Now you can't say that. It's Big Guy.
It's
Big Too Close for Comfort.
Yes, Ted Knight. Well, of course, Too Close for Comfort. Monroe.
It was Monroe.
Monroe. The character who was... It was like... It's so funny there was a time where they couldn't just say, yeah, Monroe's gay. They live in San Francisco.
Yep, didn't do it.
They couldn't...
But I didn't know what's-his-name was gay. The guy from Hollywood Squares.
Paul Lynde?
But I was a kid. I didn't know what gay was. In fact, even in my teenage years, I thought gay was bumping weenies. I thought just two guys would bump weenies, and that didn't feel
bad. Think
that's
a way to do it?
That didn't seem terrible. You just
wrong with a little docking?
Bumping a wiener?
No, docking? It's fine. Docking. Is that docking? I think that's docking.
Isn't that when someone's uncircumcised?
Oh, and then they can like...
They can connect?
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be really great if you could just will... If you didn't have to pull it over, but you could just will the turtleneck over the... That's alien technology, though.
That is. That's a little advanced for us right now.
Right now it is.
But... What was the show I just was talking about?
Too Close for Comfort?
No. Paul Lynde.
Yeah.
But Paul Lynde, I heard a funny story. Mark Hamill told me this story. Did
oh,
I tell you
great.
This?
No.
Mark Hamill said he was on a plane with Paul Lynde.
Oh, my God. I already love it.
And the mother, this kid kept racing up and down first class.
Yep.
And just disturbing, bumping into Paul's elbow as he's trying to sleep. And finally, Paul looks the kid's mother and says, if your son doesn't stop running by me, I'm going to fuck him.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And I was like, what the fuck?
You couldn't say that now.
I don't think you could say it now anyway.
You know,
you're
going
to have to edit that.
In the 70s.
X gets the square. Paul, the queen dissolved members of the parliament. Can you explain? Well, maybe she liked magic tricks. He was like, I didn't know. I was just like, who's this eccentric guy? I heard apparently he was abusive with his friends.
Was he?
Like he beat his friends up.
What?
He would hit his friends.
That's cool.
But they still hung around with him.
Didn't know the story.
I read some stuff about him.
I saw him. I was going down a Tonight Show rabbit hole once, and I saw him on the Tonight Show where he sort of dropped the character. And he was just
that's good.
Talking as himself and talking about how uncomfortable he was. If you watch some
he
of those,
doesn't really talk like that?
No. So, I mean, that's an affectation.
Right.
The up and down is a bit of an affectation.
Right.
Samantha, you better tell Darren to get out of here. You know.
So the square.
But if you watch some of those older Tonight shows, like in the 70s, they're very podcasty because, you know, I think – late night talk shows have come to sort of be very superficial because there's not a lot of time and they just
know,
have to get through
right.
the promotion. But if you watch some of those older ones, they're very, very, very conversational and they come out of that, you know, that Dick Cavity era of just having people talk as themselves.
Right.
And they're really, really good. They're really interesting. And Johnny was great at setting people up and people would open up to him. And
what do you think TV shows today would be like? You know, like you got Fallon, you got Kimmel, which I love. They're great shows.
Yeah.
They're great guys. But don't you think some people like they want to see, or maybe they don't, that they want to see a little bit of the, they want to be quite, like if Kim Kardashian came on one of their shows and he just asked her something that was just like not your typical, people don't want to see that though, right? You got to be light. You got to be fun. It's late night.
Now there's so much competition And there's such a drive for stuff that's clippable.
You just got
to pass the clips around, you know.
Before, and you have 6 minutes, right? You have 6 minutes.
You know, when Carson was on, it was like 40 million people a night or whatever it was were watching him. There were only three channels. And so while they did have to make sure that the show was engaging, they didn't have to chase the audience the way that they do now. There, again, this goes back to need and desperation. There's so much need and desperation in so many television shows because there are so many things vying for your attention, not just other shows, not just network and cable, but digital stuff and games. And
yeah.
I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, I have a fucking arcade on my phone, you know, like when I was a kid, it wasn't, yeah. You had an Atari, but the experience was different than, although I did play it a lot, but it's just like we have so many entertainment options and so many things pulling for our attention at all times.
And don't you miss the old days at all?
No, I mean, yes and no. I think there are good things and bad things about it. I think everything's so interconnected now and there's so much, you know, I mean, there's so much more information available.
But it's hard. It makes it harder. It's like there's so many things to watch. There's so many things to do that you end up not doing them. It's like it's almost too much.
But it puts like in the old days, pressure on you as a creator was to be good enough so that one of three companies would show you to the world.
That's true.
Now,
very true.
Onus 50. Is on you as a creator to make something that's good and engaging and interesting enough to cut above the noise. And so it's really just you have a similar responsibility. It's just the infrastructure has changed, and now the network, the old school network, is now essentially a crowdsourced attention corporation,
right?
If that makes any sense.
Well, do you notice that, like, back in the day, it's like when you had Raiders of the Lost Ark came out,
yes,
you knew that a big movie like that probably wouldn't come out for 6 months to a year.
Right.
A big movie where you could just, like, so excitement. And now I just feel like, I'm not knocking movies, but I'm just saying, every month there's something, the huge animated blockbusters, like, there's so many that for me it's just, I don't know if it's as exciting. We're all spoiled kids now.
Well, we've just seen so much. And part of that is just age. You know, like, we have seen, you and I have seen so much entertainment. I mean, we just sang the fucking the Give Me a Break theme song. Like, we've seen so much that it's just all kind of like, oh, whatever. Yeah, I've seen that. I don't need to. Do I really need to get in my car and go park and go to the arc light, wait in line, get in the fuck? Someone's going to be on their fucking phone in the seat, you know?
Right.
So it just, we're getting to the point where we've just had it, you know, with having to deal with stuff.
Or
so,
maybe I'm just becoming my father.
Maybe it's possible in some ways, but I doubt that you will fully be able. I think you will fully become your father because you're so aware of
not becoming
my
father,
which weirdly might loop you around and become like him in certain ways. But in general, I don't think you'll. I don't think that's a real.
Well, I would say this though. I commend him. He was such a hard worker. That's all he did. He never missed a day in 40 years of work. Never missed a day. Work was his life. That was it.
What did he do?
I respect. He worked in a pharmaceutical company. He was a plant manager for Watson, and he makes big drugs. In fact, he manufactured the drugs my mother took, pretty sure.
Interesting.
Probably. No, but he was always working. He was just a guy who loved work. He was really close with all the people he worked with.
And just didn't really understand?
Just me. I don't think he just – I think he just – you know, when I wanted to become an actor, here he was 1420 SAT, which was good back then. I don't know how the numbers changed.
Sure, I think it's still –
yeah. Smart guy, you know, went to Stony Brook University, worked in labs, just really bright, very educated. And then he just saw that, you know, I was kind of different. I was eccentric. I was going to be an actor. I remember him seeing me in a play, which I go, hey, I'm pretty good in this. I think he's going to – and I remember them seeing me, you know, and he's like, oh, okay. And we went to a steak at Denny's. And I remember saying, so I think I'm going to be an actor. He's like, eat your steak. That was it. I remember, eat your steak. He's like, because think about it. If you're like, oh, great. You don't want your kid to become an actor. I mean, you want them to do what they want to do. But I could understand now that he just wanted me to be happy and successful maybe. And being an actor is a one in a million shot.
Forgive me for asking this. Tell me the name of your podcast again.
Inside of You.
Michael Rosenbaum. That's a good name. You could have called it Eat Your Steak.
Eat Your Steak.
Eat Your Steak.
But people are like, what does it mean? What
Eat Your
doing?
Steak.
Eat Your Steak.
Eat Your Steak.
This is fun.
It is great. I mean,
love your house.
Oh, thanks.
I could walk around even when you're not here.
Yeah, you could just be weird. Around. You could haunt. You could be a. You could be a like you could haunt the house, but without being a ghost.
Yeah,
we could just hear you in the walls.
I said we should play some hide and seek because you have so much cool shit. You have this cellar. It reminds me of like old like Boris Karloff lived here.
You know, we should do like a murder mystery here.
I mean, this would be a blast.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, I like that kind of shit. Or we could play a good game of Golden Girls Clue.
Oh my God, I want to play that so bad. Do you have it?
I'm getting it.
We have to get it.
I'm going
to
get you one.
Really?
How about this? I'm going to get you one for the holidays.
I would really appreciate it. I'm not joking. I will play the shit out of Golden Girls Clue.
I swear to God, I'm going to get you it.
That show is...
It was priceless.
It still is. It still holds up.
It still makes me laugh. Yeah. It still makes me cry.
And there's...
They're sweet.
There's only one surviving member of that... cast.
And her name is...
Betty White.
Betty White. How old is Betty White?
She's 92 or 3.
Can you name the four actors? Of course you can. Rue McClanahan.
Estelle Getty, Rue McClanahan, B. Arthur, Betty White.
That's pretty good.
And then the guy who played the neighbor was Richard... he was on Soap.
Not Schimmel.
No. Robert Schimmel was a separate comedian.
Yeah,
Richard
right.
Mulligan. Richard Mulligan.
No, Mull.
No, Richard Mull was on
Martin Mull was on Golden Girls, wasn't he, ever?
He might have guest starred. Richard Mull was Bull on Night Court. Richard
yes.
Mulligan was the neighbor who was on the spin-off of Empty Nest.
Give me the beatbox version of Night Court. That's pretty damn good. Give me Barney Miller. Going to Barney Miller.
Okay,
Barney Miller. But they didn't say that. But they didn't have any words. I love
this is Barney Miller.
Barney Miller. Name three characters in Barney Miller, and that's it.
Fish.
Yep.
Barney. Wojo. Wojo Hoss.
The Asian guy?
No, that was the... The guy with red hair was Wojo Ohoitz, I think
wow,
his name
I didn't
was.
I remember that. That was a good show.
Yeah, it was good. That was a great show. Hal Linden.
Hal Linden.
Barney Miller. Someone probably no stranger to Battle of the Network Stars back in the day. They rebooted that, didn't they? Didn't ABC do Battle of the Network Stars again?
Did they?
I think they did.
Katie?
Did it do well? Battle of the Network, Cable, and Internet Stars.
Did you ever do Dancing with the Stars?
No, probably not.
Are you a good dancer?
Not really.
Could you become a good dancer?
I mean...
Are you coordinated?
I think I could be passable if I dropped everything else I was doing and focused on
Isn't
it.
Isn't that the thing?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing.
Hey, you know, I'm going to drop my career and do Dancing with the Stars.
Well, that's the idea. Like, well, you only have so much time and energy in your life. You know, like, if you wanted to... Drop everything and become a... I mean, I would never be a great dancer, but I could be an okay... For a layperson, for a non-professional dancer, if I really, really focused all of my energy. But I'm never going to do that because I don't care. I don't care. That doesn't excite
me
in any way.
Do you dance by yourself, Chris?
Definitely not.
Do you not ever get out of the shower like
I
do?
No, my poor wife.
No, but you never by yourself. I will hear a Micah Mechanic and the Mechanic song come on, and I will just go in front of the mirror naked and I'll dance.
Which Micah and the Mechanic song?
Not In the Living Years. That's a sad
that's
song. His dad dies at the end. I'm not going to dance to that. That would be macabre.
Sing it loud.
In the Living Years. All I need is a miracle.
Yep.
All I need is you.
Do a little white guy shuffle of that.
Man.
Yeah, my poor wife would love to dance more, and she'll just come up to me and start dancing around me, and I just stand very still and just sort of shut my eyes like, when is this going to end? And and I feel bad for her because
really?
She's not getting the full, like she deserves me to be the kind of partner who will just dance with her, but I just freeze because I'm socially awkward and I don't know what
but
to
do.
But
she knew you couldn't dance before you got married.
She did. She agreed to it.
Yeah.
She agreed to this.
She can't say, you know what?
Yeah, nothing's changed.
Yes.
I didn't do it while we were dating.
If you started dancing, she'd think something's going on.
She would think, yeah, are you cheating? Why are you dancing now? This is weird. This is weird.
You're so lucky you're married.
I'm lucky I'm on a
dating
person.
App. Yeah, she seems like a great person. I just saw her boots.
She's the best.
She is. Well, I don't. I don't really know her. I met her once.
How are you finding the dating apps?
Well, I'm only on one. Here's what I did. I'm on this one. It's called
Raya.
Am I allowed to say that? So I've been on that, and You know, the problem with this is
that's the actor-y type.
Well, I was in a relationship, and then I was out of a relationship, so I got on this thing, Raya.
Yeah.
So what happens is you're like, you connect with someone. You're like, well, that's a start.
Yeah.
And then you say, hey, how's it going? What else are you going to say?
Yeah.
Like, be original. Like, how do you be original?
Did
I don't know
be
you.
Original?
No, no, but I hear that. Like, you know, you could see on their things that says, be original, just not like, you know, if you're looking for sex, this is not the, you know, or just here for friends, whatever. So I'll say, hey, how's it going? Hope you had a great weekend. I feel really stupid. I don't add that last part. And then 4 days later, oh, hey, what's going on? Oh, not much. 4 days. It's like this whole, it's like you're still playing games. I thought you're on here to kind of.
Right.
And then my MO is I'm not embarrassed by it. I'd rather go to coffee first. If I don't know you and I can't see you, I don't want to just pick you up and go to dinner with someone I don't know for 3 or 4 hours and it's uncomfortable if you don't like them, or maybe they're not into me and now what do you do?
Right.
But if you just go for a coffee, or does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. It's a good way to sort of casually get to know each other to find out, like,
yeah,
let's take this to the dinner level.
And you know what else works? For me, let's say you're texting.
Okay.
Let's say you're texting for 2 weeks.
Okay.
Here and there, it's nice. It's a rapport. It's, you know, it's beyond weather talk. You know, it's like, oh, I did this weekend, blah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah, what's your sister do? You know, it's getting, let's have a FaceTime before we go on a date.
Boy, I don't know if I would have done that. I don't know
I
if
do.
I ever did a dating app.
Let me tell you, call me a freak. Call me a weirdo. Because the second I'm talking, Katie, you're talking to a guy. I'm sure you're in a relationship.
Your boyfriend.
You're a stable woman. And I'll just be like, hey, what's going on? And right away, you start to get a rapport. Like, you see if you're even, like, it's just you're talking to them. I FaceTime my grandparents,
my
parents,
my friends.
We are
meant to look at each other's faces, by the way.
We are.
We have evolved. I mean, like, maybe we'll evolve out of that.
Yes.
This generation, like, the kids being born now might evolve out of that. And like, no, we just interface with text. But, you know, what's very difficult is, there's such a small part of language is the actual words that you are using, and so much is about context and nuance and body language and eye contact.
Yeah, I can't. I'm not good on text. One girl told me once. She said, "You're a terrible flirter." And I'm like, "I haven't met you. Your texts are not flirty at all. I'll say something, and you're like, I can't flirt on text. Wow, what are you wearing?"
Right.
Gosh, you look cute, I think. What do you say?
I don't know. It's all odd.
It's all very odd. So an occasional FaceTime, like maybe we talk and you're like, yeah, you know what? I just wasn't in. And then you're done. You don't even have to go on a date.
Right.
Why do that to you? I just.
FaceTime coffee.
FaceTime or go for coffee or a lunch. Have a burger somewhere.
I would be more. Because I think FaceTime is a little awkward.
Do you? Because I FaceTime all my friends.
You know why?
Because
you're constantly looking. You're not looking at the camera because you're trying to make eye contact. So you're looking down. And then at a certain point, you just start looking around because the other person's not in the room with you. I would much rather meet up, you know, with someone.
Okay.
And, you know, I did go on a date once where we met for coffee first, and it was nice. And then we went and had dinner, and then it didn't go any further than that. But it was all very pleasant.
But if I'm like, here's the deal: I don't FaceTime like, hey, how's it going? I'm going to FaceTime you right now. That's not that.
Right.
It's more like, hey, a week or two of texting and like getting a little bit of, oh, here's my actual number, and then all of a sudden it's like, hey, you want to just like FaceTime? It's like, who knows? Maybe you'll hate me. You'll think I'm a creep.
Right.
Just get on, and then we talk for a few minutes. That's happened. I can't say with everybody, but it has happened.
Well, it is. I do.
Dating's
not
a bitch.
It is. Especially when you like to know what's going on.
Am I too old, Hardwick?
No, we're not too
old. I'm 45. Well, you're married. Of course, you're not too old. How old are you?
I just turned 46.
You look incredible. It's the workout you just had.
Come on.
I don't look at you and think Thanksgiving cake.
Yeah, fuck. Well, I didn't eat all the cake. Well, the cake was so good.
What was it? What kind of cake was it?
It was a red velvet cake. My wife got this company called Delicious. I think it's called Delicious Arts. And they made a fucking incredible turkey cake.
A turkey cake.
I'm going to show you a picture of it. It is a like a cartoonish turkey cake that had a red velvet interior, so that when we cut the cake, he sort of looked like we had like really cut into him.
I have to see this
here. See,
Oh, holy crap. How'd they do that? You guys can't see this, but this is certainly a giant turkey. It's elevated.
I posted it on my Instagram.
Oh, they know this. People have seen this.
If you some look have,
on,
yeah.
On Chris's Instagram, that's probably a very expensive cake.
It probably was. It probably was.
It could have been about a $200 cake.
And so, of course, I had to take a picture because his eyes were all googly. So, of course, I had to take a picture of me pretending to blow the turkey cake.
Of course.
I mean, why wouldn't I do that?
That's pretty phenomenal.
Why wouldn't I do that? My mom was here for Thanksgiving, and I go, Mom, turn around. I'm going to do something. And she goes, I know what you're going to do. And so my mom has started doing this thing. Like when I do filthy things like that, she just starts going, vagina, 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 vagina. I'm like, please. She goes, now you know how it feels. I go, yeah, but please. Don't do this. Let me just blow the turkey in peace, Mom.
That's amazing. My mother's not affected by me doing anything. In fact, I'm not sure you like toilet talk, but
love it.
Well, I was home in Indiana, and I had a Pizza King Stromboli, one of my favorites, and I thought I could make it to my mom's house in time. 7-minute drive, and I drove there, and the doors were locked. She wasn't home. She stepped out for a minute, and I was really, it was hitting me. And I looked across, and I hadn't met the neighbor who was mowing the lawn, and I didn't want to ask the neighbor if I could just go use his crapper and take a big crap in his house. I just felt like it wasn't right. And so I was. What am I going to do here? I'm sweating now. You know the sweat you have when you just got to go to the bathroom, Katie. We've
the
all
Stromboli
been there.
Shit sweats.
Yeah, Stromboli shit sweats. The SS.
Mm-hmm.
Stromboli shit sweats.
Three S's.
Yes, three S's. Figure that out. And I went in my rental car, and I went in the glove compartment. I got the plastic bag that holds all the registration and everything. And I got some. I saw the little Cottonelles that have like 15. That probably had 8 wipes left. And I jumped
over
her fence.
Where is this going?
And I took a country squat in her backyard. And I wasn't pleased with it.
And did you dig a hole?
A human dump. I couldn't even dig a hole. I didn't have time. And I could see people through the slats.
What did you do with the Cottonelles?
I wiped my ass with them.
But then what did you do with them?
I put them in the plastic bag. I put them all in the plastic bag. I zipped it up, and I threw it in her trash.
Did you bury the poop like a Jack Russell Terrier?
I didn't. But there's other dog poop around, but for some reason the flies...
You just thought...
The flies came to only my poop, which was really weird. I was kind of insulted by it. And so...
No, that means you have a... They just wanted some...
High fiber?
Stromboli.
And so anyway, I threw them away, and I... you can cut this out if you want.
No, this is 100%.
And I was embarrassed, but I had some antibacterial stuff, and I wiped my hands off. And then I sat there, and I went... My mom came home, and she goes, hey, I go, Mom... I thought you were home. I had to just take a big crap. I ate a pizza, Stromboli at Pizza King, and now I had to take a big crap in your backyard. I crapped in your backyard. And my mother looks at me and says, I thought we were going out to dinner. I just crapped in your... I'm a human...
So then you must be hungry again.
I thought we were going out.
I love that in part of your mind you were like, my poop is going to camouflage with the dog poop. No one's going to know.
They knew.
No one's going to know. Then the dogs must have been like, what's all this then? Like the dogs must have smelled something different.
Something odd.
Something very odd.
Something, yes. It was
and you just left it there. That is...
I did leave it there. You know, until right now in this moment, I didn't think there was anything wrong with leaving a shit in a backyard where dogs usually shit.
But
what's the difference?
What a great testimonial for Pizza King. Hey, a Stromboli will make you shit in your mama's yard.
But I would go back there any day of the week because I love their Stroms, Chris. I really do. Apologize to the listeners out
I'm
there.
I'm not sorry at all.
Good. Your listeners like dung talk?
You know what? Some do, some don't. Some really do. I don't know, but it's a great story.
Thank you.
It's such a great story. It's a very human story.
It happens.
Not at all what people would have expected.
Vagina, vagina, vagina. I love that your mom says
from
that.
Lex Luthor.
Yeah, there it is.
One time I had to shit in my mother's yard, all right?
At first I was like, why did I just start telling the story?
I don't think I've ever pooped outdoors on.
You've never taken
the...
a human dump?
No.
You've always made it to a toilet?
Yes.
Never even in the pants? In your alcohol days?
No, I don't think I ever had any...
You peed?
Yeah. No, I've never...
You've never peed your pants?
I mean, not since
Dude, I've done some embarrassing... I'm not ashamed of it. I've had moments.
I was not that kind of drunk when I drank. I did not lose bodily function. I never blacked out.
Oh, wow. You're good. Wow. That's impressive.
I didn't have
impressive.
Any of that stuff. But yeah, no, I don't think I've ever had the sensation of my growing a poop tail and having it hit the dirt and coil
like a weird shit snake waiting to strike.
I'm just going to say one thing.
Yeah. Is it time?
I didn't plan it.
But
I didn't plan this crap.
Every year.
If I could change it, I would have asked the neighbor mowing the lawn. I would have said, "Can I just please shit in your bathroom? I'm going to shit in my mom's backyard." And maybe this story never would have been told.
I almost feel like I have such anxiety about that. I think I probably would have done what you did.
I think Katie's upset with me.
No, Katie's not at all.
Katie, have you ever done that?
Have you ever had to poop on the earth?
Well, when I camp, yeah.
Were you camping?
Oh, a camp. Well, you have to. Where are you going to poop if you're camping? You bury it, though.
In the river, or do you just like, dig a hole?
You go and dig a hole and go and
dig a hole. Yeah, I also crapped in the Rio Grande once.
Throw what?
Yeah, it was a huge river, though. Yeah, who cares?
Taking a shit in the Rio Grande.
Yeah.
The sequel to Eat Your Steak. You are?
Well, you
far
know.
Away. Oh, so it doesn't.
Because you're drinking water.
Oh, that's true.
What are those the creatures that are they're really cute? The eucalyptus, they hang up in the trees.
Koalas?
No, they are koalas. But what's the other creature that's really slow? Sloths.
Sloths, a tree sloth.
So, do you know how sloths? You know this history of their shitting?
No.
Sloths, they take about 45 minutes to come down from a tree to shit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
They don't shit from where they are. You think they're so lazy they're going to shit from up in the tree.
Right.
But they don't, because it attracts other animals. And the animals will see the shit and they'll look up and they'll smell it and they'll kill the sloth. So they go down, it takes them 45 minutes.
They go down to Pizza King.
They bury it, they go down to Pizza King, and they 45 minutes up a tree. For a lazy fucking sloth, that's pretty impressive.
You know what? I don't want to have to commute to my shits. That's too much.
You'd be dead.
You would. Yeah, you'd be dead.
Slothwick, you'd be dead.
I mean, that'd be like fucking driving to Santa Monica every time I had to drop a deuce. There's no way.
I'm shitting here.
I'm doing it here. Yes. I don't care if a predator finds me. I do not feel like sitting in this tree traffic all the way down.
Tree traffic. That's exactly right. Yeah. Well, now I know how you feel. I know where your priorities are.
The carpenter ants, so there's a lot of construction on the tree. There's a fucking... There's a family of wrens. I gotta... Navigate. I'm not doing this every time. I'm not doing this every
it's
time.
Amazing. It's
either
amazing.
I'm going to stop shitting or I'm just going to drop it from this branch. But something is not, I'm not.
I mean, if you're playing Pictionary, Pictionary is the game where you make your own, no, not Pictionary. What's the game where you put your own, they guess which one's real. Like you write something, I write something as an answer, and then somebody goes, which is the real one?
Oh, is that Boulder Dash?
Boulder Dash. But right, if you wrote... Sloths actually take a shit on the, they go 45 minutes down a tree, shit, and then climb 45 minutes up. You'd be like, nah, that's not
that's
real.
Not real.
There's no way.
What animal would do that? But what else are they doing? It's not like they have to get back to an office job.
Yeah, what are they doing?
That's all their, that's their whole day.
Maybe they only shit once a week, so it's not a hassle.
Maybe.
You know, maybe that's it.
Does it take them 45 minutes to do it? Or what if they were ironically fast shitters?
Could you imagine? Maybe when they had this shit, they were super speed.
Yeah.
For some reason, they just glide down that pole like a fireman.
It's the only thing they're fast at. Everything else is like...
That would be pretty incredible.
I gotta take a dump. Got all done. Back up to the tree. Here I go. Circle gets the square.
X gets the square, X. And the sloth talk like Paul Lynn. If your sloth comes shitting by me again, I'm gonna fuck him.
Gotta cut. Inside of You is Michael Rosenbaum's podcast that you should listen to. It is a great, fun, and there's a video component as well.
Yeah, you could see your video that I interviewed.
See my
you.
Stupid face in your living room.
My living room.
And anything else you want to promote?
Not really.
All right.
I hope I'm in the next Guardians of the Galaxy. Although James, when I interviewed him, he did hint. I said, so maybe Martin X is going to come back. He goes, yeah, why would I put you in the end credits if you're not coming back? I'm like, sweet. And I kind of, so I don't know which one, if it's, you know, but hopefully that will come up
soon.
That's
exciting. That's really exciting.
It's great. It's great to work with your friends, too. I knew half the guys that were on the set. You know, it's just like, you know most of those guys, James's friends. So
well, yeah, I mean, it's because it transcends just being a job and like, oh, I get to fuck around with my friends, and then it's also a billion-dollar movie.
Yes. But it is more so much more fun when you get to work with your friends. I mean, like, you know, whether you direct or whether you have – when you have your friends come on your podcast or your shows or whatever, do you like it more than some random person you don't know?
Well, there's
comfort.
There's comfort, but there's also a level of – you already
familiarity.
You already have familiarity, and you already kind of speak a common language.
Yeah,
and so it is fun to discover new people and kind of like figure out, oh wow, this is really fun and exciting. But it's also really fun when you kind of know what everyone's skill sets are, and you guys don't have to. I mean, it's like you have friends where you can immediately start riffing, and you know
that's true.
Everyone's going to catch the ball and throw it back.
Like I just had Michael Rooker on, and it just went in so many. You know how fucked up.
Oh
he
yeah,
is.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
love
the
him.
Best way.
I mean, I said, can we take a pause here? I have to take a piss. And he brought the microphone. I didn't, unbeknownst to me, into the bathroom while I'm pissing, and I was singing something to myself. And he was like, "So that was, you know, it is fun." But a lot of times when you came on, we didn't know each other other than James Gunn's events or this. And I'd see, and I was like, we always liked each other, but and then you came on, and I actually got to know you. I started from like how it all happened.
Well, we've been acquaintance for a very long
time. Since Zoe Duncan, Jack, and Jane.
Decades.
Yes, but it's not like we hang out all the time or we've been, you know, lives kind of go off.
But Michael Rooker, there's someone who's shit in a yard before.
He has shit in a few yards.
Not anyone that he's related to.
No. And I have asked him, are you packing right now at my house? The first question of my interview, he's like, no comment. That's Michael Rooker. So, dude, this has been a treat, man. I love coming on. This is a blast.
Please, yes. I hope to. I'll see you again. I'll see you soon.
Yeah, I'm going to go check out your basement for
a couple
hours.
Yeah, you can check out the basement, and then I'll see you floating around the house from time to time.
Dude, you have so many cool things. The howling masks and the...
Yeah, that's
Lydia. The wolf. Lydia is the coolest. You met the coolest. I'm not saying this. Her taste in shit is a little more effed up than yours, probably.
It kind of weirdly is. And I never thought... I always thought when I, you know, ultimately when I got married that I would have to do what Guillermo does, which is like, keep your shit in a separate house.
Yeah.
Keep your shit in a separate space. You can have your own space. And
no.
We like doubled down.
Doubled down.
I'm the one who is like, sweetheart, we have no more room for any more gremlins. You know, it's like, I never thought I would be that guy.
Well, how do I meet a Lydia? Because the girls that come over, I think they're great girls. Maybe they're more normal than maybe Lydia in a bad way.
You know, when you're, there she goes.
Lydia, hi.
We summoned you.
But I was just saying that the girls like that look at my, like the in the house with all my toys and stuff, they're just like, oh, wow, you really do have toys.
Yeah, we're just trying
see?
To...
See? That's cool.
I'm just trying to put a cap on it.
She said she'd fill every room in the house.
Shit just shows up. She was like, I'm sorry. I'm like, well, I'm not mad that you bought it. We're just running out of space, you know?
Oh,
and it's a good-sized house.
But you have
running out of space.
I don't know one thing that you should take away. The stuffed turkey, the insects over here, the Doctor Who thing downstairs, the entrance. The
TARDIS.
There's nothing you should take away from this house.
Well,
and if
we're
you
not,
did, I'd be disappointed.
You know something, Michael? When the time is right... And the universe is ready, and you're ready, then you'll get a Lydia. It's just how it all works. You just need to be okay with you.
I don't know what
this
voice
is. In the meantime,
I don't like this character at all.
I'm going to go skinny dip in your pool right
now. Please, by all means. By all means. Go wave the wand in the old pool. Just please don't shit in my yard.
I knew that was coming. You beat me to it.
Don't shit in my pool or my yard.
I will not take a hard wick on your...
It's really funny if I said,
wick.
Please don't shit in the yard, and you left, and there was a turd floating in the pool. You're like, I didn't say I wouldn't shit in the pool. I said I wouldn't shit in the yard.
Everybody loves Caddyshack, Hardwick, movie nut.
That was a candy bar. It wasn't a real turd. It was a fucking candy bar.
Oh, I'm glad you think turd.
Rosenbaum.
Funny. Thanks, man.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone, and eat your steak.
Eat your steak, Rosenbaum.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Are you tired of dating assholes? Do you want a Prince Charming? If so, we're filming a reality show. Sign up here.
12 American women are flown over to the UK for a bachelor-style reality dating show.
There are so many questions about a show like this because it's so odd.
These women have been told that they were going to be dating the world's most eligible bachelor, Prince Harry.
What? Y'all playing with me, right?
You can binge The Bachelor of Buckingham Palace exclusively on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts or the Wondery app.